You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com. Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
Rin Tin Tin, Lassie, Toto from The Wizard of Oz. These are but a few of Hollywood's famous canines. But what about their silver screen feline counterparts? Why are there more celebrity kitties? Has it something to do with a phrase, as easy as herding cats? You might not have visions of feline stardom, but you would be happy just to have your cat come when you called. No matter what a cat may tell you, they are trainable. The behaviors your teacher cat could save its life and make them more enjoyable members of your family, even if they won't fetch your slippers. Ellie Ross is a Canadian animal behaviorist and trainer. She serves as a consultant for many governing bodies in Canada and the United States. She is the founder of Kitten Kindergarten and owner of Wagon Train Incorporated in Kitchener, Ontario, Canada. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Not pumped about cleaning the litter box? Try World's Best Cat Litter Zero Mess, the litter that gives you 2 times better clumping and more odor control with less litter. That's right, you scoop once and you're done. No chiseling, no scraping, no crumbling, no problem. Looking for fast and easy litter box cleanup? Zero Mess. Try it. You're welcome in advance. Save $2 on World's Best Cat Litter. Visit www.saveonworldsbest.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Ellie, this is going to be so much fun. As my listeners know, I have cats. I have a kitten right now that I really, really love, but oh my goodness, what a bad baby. So thank you. Number one, why do I think that cats aren't trainable? They're kind of smart, I think.
I think that that's a reflection of how smart cats really are, because if they've led you to believe that they're not trainable, they just have the freedom to do whatever they want, because people will just say, well, they're not trainable, so they'll just label them as such. And as soon as they slap that label on them, that is the excuse to not train them.
So it's kind of having that petulant child who, no matter what you do, they just get their way all the time. And going, see, look, aren't I smart? I got what I wanted.
Exactly, because no matter what, all of their resources are still going to be supplied. And when they want something, they want attention, they want play, they want whatever, they have the ability to drive you insane so that you will succumb and you will give them what they want. And the principles of behavior are always the same, no matter what the species. Any behavior that gets rewarded or reinforced gets repeated, and any behavior being repeated always gets stronger. So the cats learn very quickly that they can get what they want by being annoying.
Wow. It is sad. They are smart. Now, I know they've done studies and looking at how smart a pig is compared to a dog, compared to a cat. And cats have not ranked up there, right up there with pig, which is one of the really smart ones. Do you think it's again because kitties just said, I'm not taking this test. I know I'm smart. I don't need to prove it to anybody.
I absolutely agree, because what smarter being is there of one that can avoid all work and still get the full paycheck? I think cats are brilliant. Obviously, they're great survivors. They are survivors naturally, inherently independent. They're not dependent on anything else to survive in the wild or amongst other cats. And I think as a result of that, their level of intelligence is extremely high. The cats that I've worked with, as long as they've had that proper development, socialization, exposure, and handling at a young age, I find that they are far more open to learning throughout their lifetime. If we can condition them to reward marks when they're under 15 weeks of age, then that line of communication is very, very strong. so that as they grow and as they develop, they're already conditioned. You already have that conditioned response that when they hear the reward mark, be it a simple verbal word of say yes, or maybe even a clicker, then they understand that what they're doing at that moment is the right thing to do. And as a result, something good is going to happen. So we pair positive associations with the reward mark. They learn that early on. And then throughout their lifetime, we have this amazing ability to communicate with our cats that no matter what they're doing at that moment, we can always let them know it's the right thing to do.
But Ellie, some of us are saying, no, okay, it's not my fault. I got this cat as a rescue. I got this cat as an adult. So for myself, my youngest one right now was a foundling. One of my clients found this kitty, brought it in. I didn't even think it was going to survive. It was just in such horrible condition. And then I said, okay, I'll take it. And she was really lovey to this little girl that found it. And to me, it's like, oh my goodness, you must be a dog in a person's clothing. She has just been so difficult to warm up to when I'm standing up. Laying down, I'm her favorite person. So is there hope?
Absolutely, there's hope. A great deal of it is, first and foremost, creating that association. So there are certain things that cats may perceive as threatening. And, you know, it could be because you are a veterinarian and perhaps there are certain scents that maybe you bring home that the cat finds that creates anxiety in the cat. That could be one of the possibilities. Another one is that, you know, in these situations where there's been likely some sort of psychological trauma in the cat's history, they bond with their rescuer and they have a very hard time trusting others. It just requires more time and positive association. So I always say, the very first thing we always have to do is we have to condition the cat to a reward mark. So we basically find something that they really, really, really like. Typically, I will put something, some very, very palatable cat food or ground up anchovies in a syringe, and I will feed them from that syringe. And basically what I'm just going to do is I'm just going to say the word yes, and I'm going to give the cat a treat, and then I'm going to repeat it. And I'm going to do that 85 times. And the amount of food that is dispensed is minimal because you want them to be able to consume it in under 2 seconds. Once you've completed that session, the cat now has this association that when it hears the word yes, it knows something good is going to come. So we're trying to create a conditioned response that's no different than your name. If you're in a grocery store and you know that you're there by yourself, yet if you hear your name being called, you will turn and look. So that's the conditioned response that we're looking for when we're going to say the word yes or when we're going to use a clicker. I prefer using the word yes because I don't always have a clicker with me. Once we create that, then we start to realize, oh, I heard the reward mark. Something good is coming. And through the consistency and repetition of something good coming, a paired positive association with whatever the behavior is, then the cat starts to repeat that behavior. And as I said earlier, the principle of behavior will be that that behavior will be repeated and it will get stronger. So in terms of liking you, you have to pair something positive with your presence, especially the presence of whatever the cat finds or develops anxiety over. So if your posture is triggering something in the cat, then you want to pair something more positive with that posture. Does that make sense?
It totally makes sense, and kind of by happenstance and accident, I found out that my kitten likes whipped cream. So now in the refrigerator, I always have cans of whipped cream. Whenever I go into the kitchen, the kitty's right there, and she gets her little dollop of whipped cream, and she loves me, and then she scampers away. So I think I'm going to carry the whipped cream on my hip more often.
Yes. Well, that's great that you've identified something that your kitten likes. But you have to be careful that now that the association isn't that when the fridge is opening. You want it to be associated predominantly with you, and I would fear that the cat is associating it with the refrigerator.
I have a feeling you're probably right. So again, I'm just going to carry it on my hip with me wherever I go. What I find, okay, Ellie, is interesting is that you really have a background in cognitive psychology and a degree in animal science from the University of Guelph. How did this now get you into, I know you started with dog training and elephant training, and now cat training, which seems like a major jump from elephants to cats, or is there some kind of continuum there I'm just not seeing?
I think the evolution of my transition into cats has been the fact that in all of my years of teaching dog training and behavior and conducting classes and lectures, I kept hearing people sneak the cat questions in. I kept having to sort of turn them away because the focus was on dogs and dog behavior. And I realized that there was such a desperate need, not just in my community, but in all communities, because this was happening everywhere that I went. And I found it really sad that the cat industry is lacking in terms of people available as resources to help people with these very common cat problems. And my time working with SPCAs in Canada and the United States, I found it incredibly sad how society disposes of cats in the numbers that they do. Cats don't seem to have the same value as dogs do, and society sees them far more as disposable. My belief is that if we can invest our time and education into cats and have cats that respond in ways that are much more in harmony with our homes and our expectations, and cats that now will not exhibit the same problem behaviors that have been experienced, that people will be more inclined to keep them. And also, they will miss them more if they should end up going missing. And I mean, you think about how many cats go stray, and the SPCA numbers obviously show that number is very high as opposed to dogs. But how often do you see the lost cat posters versus the lost dog posters? The lost dog people tend to put more of an effort in into seeking their companion versus the cat people. There are certainly cat people, I would never take that away from them, that they make the effort. But far more often, the number of cats gone missing is higher than dogs, but yet the effort goes towards the dogs. I want to change that.
Ellie, I totally agree with you what you're saying about people putting so much more emphasis sometimes on dogs. I'll have clients that have dogs and cats, and they're bringing their dog in every time it seems to stub a toenail or it seems to be just off a little bit. And cats, gee, you know, the last time we saw this cat was 8 years ago, you know, when it was a kitten, or we've never seen the cat before, but they really take good care of their dog. I think some of it is because dogs are much more demonstrative when they're not feeling good. Cats, I always tell people, when it feels good, what does a cat do? Sleep. And what does it do when it doesn't feel good? Sleep. Dogs are always wearing jewelry. You know, they have their collars or their name tags, and they have to be licensed in probably 99% of the communities. Not so much with cats. And the number of times cats don't have identification collars on. Oh, it's totally an indoor cat. It never goes outside. And my response is earthquakes, fires, floods, in the vernacular, stuff happens. So many times this little pudgy cat, you know it's owned by somebody, but by whom? Even having microchips, which are awesome. Not all your neighbors are going to know that it has a microchip. So having identification on your cat and dog at all times is important. And I think another thing that June mentioned is that cats are deemed to be disposable. I think some of it's because that perceived worth, because, oh, I got it as a stray, I got it as a friend gave me the cat, I went to the grocery store and I came out with, instead of a head of lettuce, I got a cat in the front. So it was free. So they have not made that investment. And I think that makes a difference.
Absolutely. And I honestly, I couldn't agree with you more about the microchipping. I wish everybody would microchip their pets. That would make a remarkable difference in returning them. But also not just microchipping, but we also should remember that people need to keep that data up to date, because often I remember at the shelter, we scanned everything for chips, and often we'd look it up and we'd find the phone number and what we believed was the owner's address. And we found out that, you know, they had given up that animal years ago, but unfortunately never reported the information to the new owners. And as well with cats, and as you talk about, you know, there's a number of reasons why an in-house cat would find a way to escape. And unfortunately, you know, that's the reality of things. And without any marking identification, it's impossible to return them. And I've seen this thousands upon thousands upon thousands of cats, and it's really, really, really disheartening. But when people have a cat, when I have worked with people, I had a family once that their daughter was horribly allergic to dogs, and she was devastated. They had to give up the family dog, and she really wanted to do agility. And so they got her a cat, and the child was not allergic to the cat, and the father built an entire miniature agility course. So they hired me to come in and help them teach the daughter to teach the cat how to do all of these obstacles. And it was remarkable seeing how quick, and obviously cats are agile, but how quick the cat learned these obstacles, learned the commands, learned the body language. And their investment into this cat, and I don't mean monetary, but just time, And the perceived value of that cat as a member of the family absolutely skyrocketed. And the family told us that there had been no other pet, that the daughter actually was far more bonded with the cat than she had ever been bonded with their dog. And they were surprised by that, that the one key thing that they identified was the amount of training and education they had invested into their cat. So it doesn't necessarily just mean about the basic behaviors of maintaining a cat that will potty in the litter box and stay off the counter and not lick the butter dish, but also a cat that is fun, a cat that you can interactively play with and have expected responses from them. And I think that that makes cat ownership or a family member being that much more enjoyable, and then therefore you're going to want to hang on to it.
I have a feeling most of the listeners do know what an agility course is and typically think of dogs going through these weave poles where they're going back and forth between these upright poles and going through tunnels and over teeter-totters and A-frames. And the thought of a cat doing it's like, huh, that's pretty good.
It is.
I know that you are the founder of this Kitten Kindergarten. What is Kitten Kindergarten? What do you do there?
Well, Kitten Kindergarten, I can't actually claim that I'm the founder of the concept. The late Dr. Sophia Yin, I believe, is the correct
yes.
founder of this. However, Kitten Kindergarten is basically a program where we want kittens under 15 weeks of age that are obviously healthy and up to date on core vaccines. And we want the entire families coming to class with them. And part of the multi-week program of coming to class involves a component of training that people don't even actually acknowledge as being training, and that would be that we make it mandatory that all cats must arrive in a crate. So that forces the owners to teach the cat safe, happy confinement in a crate, and as well as traveling. And these are two things that seem to be often lacking, and I'm sure as a veterinarian you've seen many a time cats very stressed from the car ride or the confinement of the crate. And so automatically
they just see the crate and they're over and done with. My own cats included. I'm bad. I admit it.
And I'll tell you, I can put a 200-pound St. Bernard into a crate easier than I can put a cat that doesn't want to go in.
Mm-hmm.
So first and foremost, that's the first part of the training that occurs that's not acknowledged. But beyond that, we want to work on the social skills. We want to make sure that there's good bite inhibition because, you know, later on in life or during, you know, if play becomes rough, we want to make sure, just like dogs, that they have bite inhibition, that they learn not to break the skin, not to cause pain with their teeth. And when we take kittens away from litters at young ages, which is typically what we do, same with puppies, then the bite inhibition learning stops. They don't have the mother to discipline them anymore. They don't have their litter mates that will cease playing with them when play gets too rough. And people will often, as they do with their puppies, they'll make excuses, or he's just a kitten, or he's teething, and it's never acceptable. So we wanted them to learn bite inhibition very, very early on. And as well, something that we see later in life with the senior cats is the feline cognitive dysfunction, and quite often they end up biting. Now, I would like to think, and this hasn't been proven yet, but I would like to think that this will make a difference in this problem when they get old, that the bite inhibition will stay. We also want them to have good handling skills and be able to be groomed safely for brushing, checking their teeth, their ears, their eyes, doing their toenails, all of these sorts of things, and as well bathing. If kittens are exposed to bathing at a young age, they seem to quite enjoy it and accept it willingly.
And you're not trying to drown them.
Exactly.
Exactly. Well, Ellie, this is wonderful, and I know you have lots more to say, but we do need to take a break because some people might need to use their litter box right now. So please come back after you use the litter box. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
They called it elephant skin. It was rough, wrinkly, like a Brillo pad.
His hair was falling out in clumps.
Petey stopped eating and all his hair fell out.
Our golden retriever, Sundance, he scratched incessantly. There was hair all over.
DINOVITE.com.
859-428-1000.
The omega-3 fatty acids.
Flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa.
The digestive enzymes that are cooked out of regular dog food.
Dynavite.
is nutrition.
Within 2 weeks, the shedding slowed down to almost none. The scratching went away after a few days, and Sundance's coat was starting to get shiny and glossy.
It's a 180 turnaround. His skin has cleared up. He's not in pain.
If your dog has shedding, dry skin, excessive scratching,
due to Dynavite.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000. Dynavite for life.
DINOVITE.com.
Hi, I'm Dana Humphrey, the founder of Whitegate PR. We have been specializing in PR and marketing in the pet industry for over 10 years. If you have a pet product or service you would like to promote, give us a call. We can help create awareness for your brand on TV, radio, magazines, newspapers, and blogs. Feel free to reach me directly at 619-414-9307 or learn more on our website at whitegatepr.com or follow us on Facebook.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Ellie, before the break, you were talking about bite inhibition and taking kittens and puppies away from their litters at an early age. And that always seems to be a question that comes up. What is the best age to take that puppy or kitten and take it home? What is your views?
I don't like to see them leave before 8 weeks of age. I really don't. And, you know, ideally, if the breeder, and a lot of it is dependent on the breeder, all breeders sort of seem to raise their litters differently. I'm one that, you know, if I had a litter or whenever I have whelped dogs for the SPCA, I do a lot with them. I expose them to a great number of things, but unfortunately a lot of breeders don't have the ability or time to do that. So, you know, under 8 weeks, I think, is too soon. Ideally, in a perfect world, 10 weeks, but we all know how dirty puppies can be and how demanding and wild kittens can become. So we want to make sure that we give them the social opportunity that they desperately need during that developmental period. So 8 weeks is probably ideal, but then it's up to the owners to make sure that they continue on with the social development amongst their own species, amongst other species, and throughout the environment and with people of all age, shapes, sizes, races, you know, whether they're on a stroller, on a bicycle, or in a wheelchair. All of these need exposure to the young cat or dog. If we miss that period of social development, now we have a problem. And that is where I think the majority of problems stem from in cats and puppies that are over 15 weeks of age is the lack of social exposure. So by having programs like kitten kindergarten or puppy kindergarten, we are preventing so many of the common core problems that we see in mature pets. And, you know, and as well, you know, just basic commands. There's no reason why a kitten can't learn to sit and receive a treat for that. There's no reason why they can't recall when they hear their name to come running. I know a lot of cats that love retrieving, absolutely love it, and will play it for hours on end. Target training can be a very, very, very useful tool. And, of course, general handling. But they also need to learn the difference between play and aggressive play. And there's a very fine line that occurs there. And people need to identify what is the body language that starts to show them the warning signals. And if people have the education to understand what that body language is, to identify it and know what it means, then
so that talking tail, the tail that's flipping back and forth really quickly, that seems to be usually for me to say, you know, it's time for me to back away from the kitty. We're getting to another level.
Exactly. And the body language is always one of two things. It's either offensive or it's defensive. And it's important that we understand which it is, but we should also know that regardless of which one it is, something bad is about to happen. But when it's offensive, the cat is likely going to strike intentionally. When it's defensive, the best thing that you can do to disarm that is to give the cat an escape route. And when cats roll over on their back and they expose all of their weapons, their teeth and their claws, people tend to go and pick up the cat. And it always ends badly. Always, every single time it ends badly. And if people were to understand that that posture means do not touch them, allow them to escape, then it ends on a positive note. There's an understanding there. Nobody gets bitten or scratched. And often the biting and scratching will lead to the disposal of the cat.
True. as you're talking about getting them socialized, you have that new cat. It's that 8-week-old kitten. You're now bringing it in, and you just happen to believe that cats are like potato chips. You can't have just one. So you have your resident kitty, and now you're bringing in this baby, and you're thinking, oh, this is going to be perfect. And I don't know how many times I've done this myself. And for the first, sometimes weeks, sometimes it's been months, it's like, why did I do this? This planned marriage is not working out. What can we do to optimize it? Is it better to have two males, two females, a male, a female? What's a trick? Anything?
I think that, for one, if your cat had kitty kindergarten when it was young, it's likely not going to be an issue when it's older and introducing another cat because it's been socialized to other cats. The biggest thing is that the older cat likely hasn't been socialized to other cats, and this is going to cause fear, anxiety, conflict, upset, litter box issues, destruction, aggression, all of these things. And that's probably the number one question I get asked is when they already have a cat that's established in the home and they bring home, it could be a new puppy as well or a kitten, all of these problems start. So I think first and foremost, we have to make sure that, number one, they each have their own litter box, and that litter box should be not right beside the other one's litter box. They should have their own resources. And it should be understood that the cat food as well is a resource and the water, and it would be a good idea to start off allowing them to have each individually their own resources apart from one another so that the established cat doesn't perceive as the new one as taking over or trying to steal the resources of him or herself. And that often is where I find a lot of the conflicts will start. But as well, having the older cat not having their routine change, but having them understand that having the new kitten in the house means positive things are going to happen. So finding what it is that the older cat likes, and again, pairing it with something positive, like you mentioned, whipped cream, making sure that in the presence of the new cat, the treat is dispensed. As the new cat will depart or walk away, then the treats will end. So that the older cat understands that, oh, when that new cat is in front of me, good things are going to happen. And when the new cat is going away from me, nothing happens. Absolutely nothing. So then we create a conditioned response in their mind where they pair the two together. The kitten is in front of them. I get these yummy things. Great things happen. The kitten's not in front of me. Nothing bad happens. Absolutely nothing changes. And if we can start these conditioned responses consistently, then I see no reason why we're going to have problems with them as the days go on. Now, unfortunately, in some cats that are, depending on the age, I mean, cats that are 11 to 15 years of age, it's estimated that 55% of them have some level of feline cognitive dysfunction. And in cats 16 to 20, it's estimated that 80% have this. So
basically becoming senile.
Exactly. So we have some sort of dementia going on there that can make their cognition impaired. And as a result, it can lead to anxiety, and anxiety will lead to aggression, and that aggression could be towards the kitten, or it could be redirected to you. So we have to take that into consideration. And I always tell people, if that is going on, first and foremost, talk to your vet, because it could be a treatable medical disorder. If once that's ruled out, or once treatment has occurred, then we work on the behavior component. But the fault that I see most people making is that because the new kitten is novel, most of the attention goes there, and that is the core of what starts the problems with the other cat.
It's tough, and oftentimes we say, well, you know, it had a kitty friend before, so what can be so different? There's a new kitty friend. It's like, well, you may have had a husband before, but this new guy is just, it ain't the same, and maybe, you know, they just never really did get along. It was a detente. Does it make a difference if it's going to be a male introduced to a female, two females together, two males? Does gender make a difference?
I think that I think whether or not they're spayed or neutered, first and foremost, makes a difference. And I think that in terms of what is the best to get for your cat in terms of sex, I believe that two neutered males are likely to get along the best. Certainly, the novelty of two males coming together, the initial can cause a disruption, but over time, they are, in my opinion, the ones to be most successful. Two females are the ones most likely to fight, not initially, but over time. Just my experience.
Just something about women. I know how that can be sometimes. I know one of the biggest problems behaviorally why so many cats are taken to the shelter is because of litter box issues. Mm-hmm. Ellie, what are your views? I know you've already said you want to make sure you have enough resources. I've always heard there should be one litter box per cat plus one for the house. So having two cats should be three boxes, not all right next to each other. That's a heck of a lot of litter boxes. Come on now. What else can we do?
There's a number of things we have to consider. So one is, of course, there's age-related issues. So, you know, if it's an older arthritic cat, you don't want to have a litter box that has a high step into it. From a behavior component, cats always like to be able to feel that they can escape. So I see a lot of people making the mistake of getting these cat litter boxes that have a cover over them. Most cats generally don't like that because there's only one escape route. And for cats to have reduced anxiety or acceptance, they like to have a minimum of two escape routes. A lot of cats, I find, do not like the litters, the liners in the litter boxes, and they don't like unscented litter. So sometimes it's just a matter of, it could be plain.
They don't like unscented litters?
Oh, sorry, they don't like scented litter. Thank you.
Thank you.
Question.
That's what I thought. Okay.
Yes. Mild to medium plumping litter, unscented, 1 to 2 inches deep, no deeper than that. Kept clean, one per cat, and making sure the box is big enough. Sometimes a regular cat litter box is not large enough, and my preference is to go with those larger, those plastic sweater boxes. I find those to be an ideal height and an ideal size. Having familiar litter, don't change it up, or using what was used as a kitten. The location should be low traffic area. And it should be a place, obviously, that has at least two escape routes. And we want to make sure that if we're cleaning it with an unscented soap. I like using baking soda, but cats generally find scent offensive. So that would be a reason for them not to use it. When we talk about litter box problems, sometimes people confuse litter box problems with marking. And they are two very different problems because a cat that is marking is a cat that is still using the litter box. And we have to make sure that we identify and we rule out any medical problems first and foremost before we go to the behavior component. The litter box problems is a common ongoing issue. And when people are describing their litter box issues to me, there has to be a very, very in-depth history being taken in order for us to determine what is the right thing to do.
Well, okay, we got litter box down. We talked about traveling with your pet, keeping it in a carrier, absolutely important to do. How about scratching on furniture?
Scratching on furniture, especially, I don't know, speakers for stereos, that seems to be a really popular item for cats to want to scratch. So a lot of people, they focus too much on the fact that they want to stop their cat from scratching. And that's a very incorrect approach to take because cats, they have to scratch. For their own mental health, it's what they have to do. And so we need to remember that we're not trying to teach them not to scratch. We want to teach them what and where to scratch. So sometimes cats already have their preferred items. And like I said, stereo speakers are a very popular one. So to deter them from getting at the items or the furniture that they prefer scratching, that they've been causing damage that we don't want them to scratch, I try to make it as unappealing as possible. So things like putting two-sided sticky tape on the floor around those items or taking like a plastic runner mat and turning it upside down so that the nubbies are standing up and putting it in front of it to make it uncomfortable for the cat to stand there. Or simply having sandpaper on the floor around it is enough of a deterrent. But more importantly, we need to provide an alternative because we're not going to teach them not to scratch. So when we have identified a piece of furniture or an object that they like scratching, we want to make it unappealing for the cat to be there. But very close by, we want to have the object that we would prefer them to scratch to. So we need to teach them what that is. And we need to sometimes play with different qualities and surfaces. And sometimes it's even the angle. Some cats prefer the scratch item to be on a vertical plane, and others want it to be, you know, slanted over. But regardless of whatever it is, it should not be able to shift or collapse. And we want to bait it a little bit. Sometimes rubbing catnip on there is a good way to attract their attention to it. But one of the things I find, I live on a farm, so we have a lot of hay and therefore a lot of binder twine. And something I have had a lot of success with is simply taking the binder twine and wrapping it around the wood very, 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 very tightly and making it a stable platform. And I find that cats are very attracted to that. The mistake that a lot of people will make is that once their cat's favorite scratch poster item starts to look ratty and torn, they dispose of it. And that's a very big mistake because cats really like things that are somewhat torn up a little bit. And to remove it because it's visually unsightly is a big mistake. And then your cat is probably not going to go to the new one. It's probably going to go to the furniture. So we also want to place it somewhere that's accessible. There's also the thing about using caps on the claws, and you know those will last about 4 to 6 weeks, and that's another alternative as well. And then they're just generally not causing any damage. But I tend not to suggest that to people because when the caps do fall off, the cat has no education to understand what and where is appropriate to scratch, and so they'll just continue to scratch, and you're dependent on a device that's just preventing damage rather than educating.
I think it's one of these things you're talking about, you know, you finally get that kitty scratching post that you just love and it's perfect and it's kind of ratty looking and they give it away. It's like having that favorite pair of jeans that, you know, your mom gave away when you went to school one day. It's like, really? Mom, that was my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
So you've mentioned all these things. We just have a few moments to just kind of wrap this up. So you have a cat that you've been training, you've taken it to kindergarten. You're really, really trying to get into its little brain, and it's just being bad, and you need to reprimand it. What are some safe ways, appropriate ways, to reprimand your cat?
A lot of people think that, I find a lot of people, they turn to a water bottle, and, you know, that can be effective as an aversive, for sure. However, the water bottle will always be associated with the person pulling the trigger. And therefore, the cat associates it only with you. And therefore, that behavior will now not be exhibited in your presence. Because essentially what you've taught the cat is that behavior is not safe to do when you're there. But when you're not there, that behavior is safe to do. And we always have to remember that, you know, of course, any behavior that is being reinforced is being repeated. So one should always ask themselves these questions. Am I adding to or am I taking away from the behavior? So if it's, let's say the cat is on the counter and it's eating the butter, obviously the butter is enough of a reward for the cat to return. We have to make sure we manage the environment so that they don't develop these habits or learn that the butter is yummy to begin with. Because if you see the cat eating the butter and you spray them with the water bottle, the cat will then learn, oh, well, you know, mom's not in the kitchen, she can't see me, so it's safe to eat the butter. But when mom's in the kitchen, I'll be a perfect angel and I won't eat the butter. It's much like speeding, right? We're going down the highway, we see a police officer, we don't speed. We know it's wrong, but we'll do it when they're not present. And when they're present, it'll modify our behavior, but it will not make the very behavior extinct. So we have to look at all of those different components before we can effectively deal with the behavior that we do not want. So sometimes if there has to be the use of an aversive, I think it's extremely important that it not be associated with people. So there's an item, it's called a scat can, and I find it extremely effective, and it's motion detected, and all it is compressed air. And you would have something like that on the counter so that it's not associated with anybody, and basically it would just spray the compressed air, and it's enough of an aversive to make the cat not want to go on the counter. And then you're not associating anything negative with the human beings in the home, and you're not hurting any sort of level of trust factor.
That sounds like an awesome thing to do, and we have to train ourselves before we can train that cat. People can go to Ontario and go to your facility. Not everyone can do that. So if we can't make it up to Wagon Train, what else people can do for their kittens?
I think people should hold kitten parties. I think that, you know, if you're going to your local shelter to adopt a kitten, I think it would be a great idea to talk to whoever their program coordinator is there to arrange for kitten parties or kitten get-togethers, because often these are litters that are adopted out at the same time, and allow a sign-up sheet so that people can have the opportunity to get together and have contact information for one another, or even talk to your local shelter and encourage them to offer these types of programs. It's our goal to be able to teach the shelters locally here, and hopefully that will expand and gradually be something that becomes a mandatory part of all animal shelters adopting out cats and kittens, because it's such an important part of making the adoption successful.
a lot of shelters now require people to take, you know, puppy training classes. And I think that we're really, really missing out a lot in terms of a successful adoption by not asking them to do the same with kittens.
Ellie Ross, thank you so much. I've learned a lot, and I know I'm going to be taking my whipped cream out of the kitchen. This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz. You've been listening to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. Thank you so much for listening. Please tune in again next week. We'll give you more information on how to make you the best possible pet owner. Thanks for listening. Take care.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.